to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 412 for Wednesday, the 9th of July, 2014. My name is Harry Lloyd, and I'm joined by Dave Neal. Dave, how's it going?
Very well. You find yourself? Everything okay in the desert, mate?
Yeah, not too bad. We are still holding up strong in Oman. It is currently 40 minutes past midnight and 30 degrees. It's actually been relatively cold the last few days. Hasn't gotten above about 36 degrees. I did almost manage to pass out walking to the shops the other day, so that was a fun experience.
Cold in relative terms, where we've been at 13 degrees and overcast.
cold for the Arab summer. But yeah, otherwise it's not been too bad. Spent half an hour chasing a lizard in my underpants.
Why was a lizard in your underpants?
Oh, it started off as just friends, and then he wanted to take it further, and it was a bit awkward. But yeah, so if you want to see me chasing that lizard, those are on my Instagram. That's the same name as my Twitter, HLPhotoGP. So
you want to see pictures of Harry in his pants, which there are people out there that do.
Yes, there's been several people throughout my life who have enjoyed that. Not many, but a couple.
Hopefully the free male, especially if they're free, the female variety rather than the male variety. Yes. But in this day and age, anything goes.
No, definitely female.
Harry and his Lloyd with his lizard hanging out.
Yes.
Harry and his pants with his lizard hanging out.
Yes. that's my status update.
I wish mine could be as exciting, but it's not.
No, not been chasing any wildlife.
No wildlife, no tackle out, no pants. Mm. Well, I've got pants on, but I have no pants. And really, I'm just sat here in my kitchen being really boring and fully clothed. So as much as boring the listeners with how I'm sat looking and where I'm doing and what I'm wearing, let's get into the show.
Yeah.
Welcome back, listeners. Thank you for joining us again. Nice to be back. It's the Harry and Dave show.
Yep, once more. we have Jim and Jules out on assignment at Laguna Seca.
Yeah, out in the field.
So they'll probably make an appearance on next week's show. Certainly at least their voices will, because I have it on good authority that they are getting some top interviews.
And I would hope so. Either that or they're just going to be wankered for the weekend.
Probably that too. And if you're at Laguna Seca and listening to this before the meetup, this will also be posted on Facebook, but there's going to be a Motopod meetup at Laguna Seca. Jim and Jules will both be there. It'll be at Saturday at 4 p.m. Near the fence, near the media building, overlooking the outside of turns 4 and 5, and they will have the Motopod banner there. So if you were listening to the show between when it goes up and that time at Saturday, hurry up and get over there. You can get a photo with Jim and Jules and shoot the breeze, as they say.
Nicely put.
And yeah, enjoy meeting those two.
Excellent. I'd love to meet them. But regrettably, I'm working, so I won't be there.
I have only ever met Jules. I still have not met you or Jim in real life.
Yeah, how bizarre is that we've actually never met? But there you go.
The internet is a strange place.
No, that's just a whole different ballgame. Let's move on from that one.
You can send listener feedback to motopod at motopodcast.com. And that goes to all the hosts, and as everyone who emails in realizes, most of the hosts will respond pretty quickly, and you'll sometimes end up with a much bigger conversation than you probably initially wanted.
I think that's what a lot of people do. They email in going, guys, what about this and this? Thanks ever so much. Love the show. Cheers. 27 emails later, they go, why did I ask that fucking question?
Exactly. The phone's just about to explode in their pocket from vibrating.
But yeah, we did. We enjoyed the feedback. And then as we said many times previously, good, bad, or indifferent, you know, we learn from everything. We learn with every show that we do. We're not perfect at what we do. We know that, but we're as close as you lot are going to get at the moment. So, we keep trying to improve, and we can only do that with your feedback. So keep bringing it in. Good, bad, or indifferent, we'll accept it all and we will respond accordingly, and none of it ends in off.
Exactly. Do you want to take Mike Moynihan's email?
Yeah, I'll take Mike Moynihan, no problem at all. He wrote in last week from, now, where is he? He's at Lake Louise in the Canada, isn't he?
Yeah, he invited us to stay as well. So maybe
yeah, and he's invited us over. Some Canadian hospitality. We'll take some of that. Thank you very much, Mike. That's superb. Really appreciate that. I'm just going to get my coat after the show and I'll be over shortly. I wish. Yeah, up in Lake Louise. And he wrote in saying, gang, who's in response to our show last week about who was getting in Lorenzo's head, whether it was Marquez or Rossi, as we were sort of mulling between ourselves as we were chatting last week. Who's got more into Lorenzo's head, Marquez or Rossi? Neither. It was Lorenzo himself. In the past, when mind games were played on Lorenzo, it didn't matter. He knew that on his best day, there was no one better in the world than himself, at least in his mind. The results in world championships proved it. To Jorge, the mind games were immaterial and inconsequential noise. All he had to do was take solace in his pure self-belief. Now with Marquez, he realizes he is no longer the best and his fine efforts will have no effect. That maybe it all wasn't true. There now was doubt. In his ability as a rider and against the rest of the paddock, he's come to realize that he is no longer Superman and his cape has holes. I really like that analogy.
Yeah, that's good.
I like that a lot. Doubt is a powerful thing. I'm sure yourself, Harry, all the listeners, we've all experienced doubt of something at some point, and it is a powerful thing. And then there's fear. Harry mentioned that Lorenzo was afraid in Assen. It happens. In the past, yes, Lorenzo shrugged off injuries. But Dave, can you expect that attitude infinitely? Absolutely not. Very fair point. There will come a time after 2083 or 581 crashes when the human mind says enough. Has Jorge reached that point at 27? Yes, he's still a young man, but how many painful crashes has he endured for the past 13 years on the world stage? Plus how many years before that? 20 years total? I think that's a very, very fair point. Dave, I am likely about as fast on a pair of skis as you are on a motorbike. I would hazard a guess that you're probably faster. But I had a horrible crash and injury, and I am man enough to admit that I am now scared and can never truly push beyond my maximum on a race course again. So I'm not going to say I am at a world level like Jorge, but fear of the ragged edge happens after a severe injury and or after a cumulative toll. At a high competitive level, pushing to 98%, you will likely never win again. So with a combination of doubt and fear, you now see 99 now languishing in 13th place at his last race with his bulletproof belief in himself now damaged. And take that metaphor any way you want. I think this is the beginning of the end for Jorge. I hope he proves me wrong. Mike. In all fairness, that's a very, very well thought out email. And thank you, Mike, for getting in touch as always. Really appreciate that and taking the time to put that together. There's some serious thought gone into that. And there are points in there that are hard to argue against.
You look at Nakagami. Nakagami is clearly a rider who's suffering from a confidence issue. He came into the Moto2 season as a title favourite. And then all that confidence has just gone. He's gone from being a front runner to struggling to score points. And sure, Nakagami probably wasn't as mentally strong as Jorge Lorenzo to begin with, but it's still potentially the same process. And I think that Mike does have a point that this could potentially be the chink in Lorenzo's armor that eventually could erode and could cause it all to come apart.
The makeup of Lorenzo, the doubt does have the opportunity to manifest itself as well. Because the way his character is built, he's quite intense, and there's a potential that he could end up brooding on it and it affecting him even more. Because he is the polar opposite to Marc Marquez, who at the minute, because he hasn't had a China or a Laguna Seca like Lorenzo's had to really shake that confidence. Which makes you, in the flip side, it makes you think how dominant would Lorenzo have been if he hadn't had those crashes. To the knockbacks that he's had that Marquez hasn't had yet. Well, that's by the by. This is about Lorenzo. I misjudged when I spoke about it last week with you about fear. I didn't think that fear would be an issue, but that's because I'm not a professional racer and I haven't raced at any particular level. And obviously Mike has with his skiing, he's raced at a decent level, so he can speak from experience. I get the, you know, I still see a lot of these riders as kind of superheroes, and because they're infinitely better than I am. Not that they're indestructible or anything like that, but they're the best at what they do. And you think, well, surely they can't be scared, otherwise they wouldn't do it. But when you look back and you have time to reflect on Asen, and you look back and you read Mike's email and you think, do you know what? He's actually got a point. There is some fear. And then obviously Lorenzo came out and said afterwards, I was scared, but I didn't believe it. I thought that was PR spin. I'm a cynical little git at times.
It is interesting, and comparing it to something like the TT, like I was reading the MCN Sport today, and there's an interview in there with John McGuinness, and John McGuinness says that he's not scared at the TT, but he always rides with something in reserve to balance the risk.
Any TT rider will do that. No TT rider rides under. I had this argument with Dave Miller at BSN that they don't ride at 100%.
Yeah, that's not to say that they're not pushing, but they're...
That's aware. Different.
Yeah, exactly. John McGuinness obviously rides with something in reserve, and he manages that fear, so it doesn't become fear, but it becomes a sort of logic. But I think with GP races, they can either manage that fear and turn it into that logic, or it does, like with Nakagami, just erode. Like Mick Doohan one time said that you know, every time you got on the 500, it was trying to kill you. So there's clearly some element of fear somewhere in the back of Mick Doohan's mind, but even despite almost losing his leg, he was obviously able to overcome that fear and turn into something good. So I think that this is a big crossroad for Lorenzo, and it could be like in 2008 again, where he overcame the fear.
Yeah, he did, and go on to become champion. Yeah,
yeah. Or as Mike said, it could start to spell the end for him, and it could just keep chipping away at him, until he ends up at Ducati riding for a lot of money.
Well, stranger things have happened, haven't they?
That's true.
I did see him. Who was it? GP Bry on Twitter.
Yes, the Photoshop,
the mock-up of the Lorenzo photo. If you can put that on the show notes for the listeners, if you can rip that and obviously credit GP Bry for it. Big fan of the show, and good evening, Brian. Glad you're listening. Thanks for your input on Twitter, mate. Really appreciate it.
But it is a big crossroads for Lorenzo, and fear and doubt is probably the most toxic thing and most worrying thing.
No question, because you can only overcome it yourself.
Yeah, it's not like an injury where it will eventually heal with time, no matter what you do.
No, it's a mindset, isn't it? And the only person that can get you out of that mindset is you. And the same with you, with uni work, me at work. If you know, it's on a lesser level, but it's the same principle. Once things start getting you down, unless you shake yourself out of it, it will continue to do so. And you can use the word depression and things like that, and it happens to a lot of major sportsmen and women, that when things aren't going right, because they've been used to success for a long time, it can be a form of depression that sets in. And if you have that self-doubt, and unless you're only as good as your last result, regardless of how many championships you've won, you know, form is temporary, but class is permanent. But if that starts to manifest itself, and we look at, you know, he's going onto the back foot a little bit at Sachsenring this coming weekend, because he crashed and injured himself last year and didn't race.
Mm.
So he's on the back foot for there already. Before they head to the States after that, so it's a difficult time for him. He needs a podium. I mean, screw that. He needs a win. But
maybe a step too far.
But the only saving grace from that is nobody else is winning apart from one. So he's not losing out in that sense, because he's not losing out to Rossi, Pedrosa. It is Rossi and Pedrosa. I was going to throw Dovi in there, but that's only one or two. That was circumstantial. So from that point of view, he really needs a second place to come back, as he was training at Mugello and what have you. He needs to be on that upward curve. To try and arrest the slump. There's some good big words tonight. You can tell I haven't been at work.
Firing on all cylinders.
But yeah, exactly right. So yeah, something has to give with it. And yeah, if he has got the fear at Assen, then that should have gone by the time he gets to Saxon Ring. Shake it off, have a couple of good early sessions, take it easy on that final left before the top of the waterfall on the right, and avoid a repeat of last year. And he's got to rebuild his confidence. But it's hard when his teammate is doing so well.
Yeah, and the other thing is that Jorge is trying to negotiate a contract with Yamaha, and it, at the moment it seems like he's just arguing between a 1 or a 2 year contract. But you know, Yamaha can see that he has this fear, so that decreases his value to them a lot.
Yeah. I love how there's all these 2 year contracts going on. It really pisses on my theory from last week. 2 year contracts are the new 1 year contract. I think they're a great move.
Well, if you're in a factory team, they are at least. Satellites are still.
Yeah, they're still. The Division 2 is still up for grabs, isn't it?
Mm.
But as Rossi said today about the. With all the changes in MotoGP coming up.
Yeah, 2016 is a 0 year.
Exactly right.
It's a 0 year for all the riders, for all the manufacturers.
And he's not going to be part of it, it seems. Well, he won't be, will he? Because he'll be 30.
He could be. He said that if he's still towards the front, he might be.
But, interesting.
Well, yeah, that's something that we'll have to wait and see. But 2016,
yes.
I think we'll definitely see a big sea change. We'll get to some of those sea changes in news.
Yes, indeed. But,
there's a couple more emails we got.
Well, yeah, thank you for that, Mike. That's given us some food for thought as well. The listeners that have had a listen to that and have obviously got their own thoughts on it, by all means, send us your thoughts via email, via Twitter at @moto_pod, over at the website at the MotoPod fan page. Bring us your input. Be more than welcome. And any emails, we can pass them on to Mike. You can have discussions between yourself. By all means, let us know what you think.
Yeah, definitely. I think that that Lorenzo's mind situation is one of the biggest shakeups we've seen in a good few years.
And it's not just a purple patch, is it? It's not just something that's over the last race or so.
No, it's
from
been
the start
boring.
Of the season.
Yeah.
And gone and basically, I was going to say escalated downwards, but the word is spiraled. It's what I'm looking for. Interesting. That's going to run and run, that, especially come next weekend. We'll talk to Neil Hodgson on Tuesday, and we'll get his thoughts on that as well from somebody from the inside.
Yeah.
And get his thoughts on what's happening with Lorenzo, amongst other things, and World Superbikes and what have you. So we'll have Hodgie back on the show and see what he thinks as well. That'd be interesting from a rider's perspective and somebody who's won a world championship and has had
big crashes
and issues with a ride, you know, problems as he did with Dantin and one or two others, and just to see his point of view on it and, yeah, how confidence gets affected and how it gets knocked.
Interesting as always with Hodgie, it's looking. But another interesting email we got was from Jesse Waters. They sent along a link to a Tumblr page called Classic Motorcycle Racing, and I'll provide a link in the show notes. And it is a collection of hundreds and hundreds of classic motorcycle racing photos. So if you're ever bored at work or bored at home, you can have a scroll through there. And these are proper classic racing photos. This is, yeah, proper 50s and 60s sort of stuff, not just 80s and 90s.
I'd love the 80s and 90s stuff.
It is good. But yeah, this is full on, you know, silver Honda with green number plates and yellow streaks.
Wow.
Yep.
That'll do.
So yeah, if you're interested, that'll be in the show notes.
I love how Jules replied to that. He's like, I'm going to get the sack now. He's just spent all his time looking at those pictures. But yeah, fantastic. It's well worth a look if you're on Tumblr. If not, then get yourself an account and just have a look just for that. It's well worth a drool over.
Yep, it is.
Emeritus friend of the show, Wiggy San. His Suzuka blog is up and running. He's also done a few bits and pieces for us with regards to Suzuka, which we'll put out nearer the time. He's given us a whole list of entrants and times, and he's also looking for a link for the race as well. Wiggy-san, the absolute doyen of Suzuka, really knows his stuff on that front, and great for a follow if you're out there at Wiggy-san. he'll keep us updated as to what's going on, and as part of Moto Race Feed as well, I believe. If he's covering it, Wiggy-san will let us know either way on that front. We've got all sorts of stuff from him via email that we'll put in the show the week before Suzuka all kicks off. But in the show notes will be Wiggy-san's blog. Welcome to the 2014 Coca-Cola Zero Suzuka.
Yeah, and that has all the Twitter accounts to follow and all that sort of thing. So if you want to get, because they're currently testing, obviously, so if you want to get some photos from testing, then his blog is the perfect place to get the Twitter accounts to do that.
Superb. Thank you, Wiggy-san. Really appreciate it.
Yes. And moving on. Oh, wait, there was one more shout out we had to do for emails. A shout out to Daniel Humphreys for providing an excellent spreadsheet of data for the
data.
I'm just providing a wide range of pronunciations for our global audience.
Mate, don't get me started on your pronunciations. They're brilliant.
But anyway, big thank you to Daniel Humphreys.
Thank you, Daniel. Superb work.
We'll put a link to his Google Doc in the show notes as well. And he's gone through MotoGP, World Superbike, and BSB, and broken it down into crazy stats. And I will probably be stealing this for various work things I have to do.
I think you should. And I think we'll be using it for the show on a regular basis because looking at the amount of stats that are in there, number of pole positions, number of fastest lap, number of wins, where they are, race one, race two, if you're looking at World or British Superbikes. And it just, man, in the nicest possible way, Daniel, you need to get out more. No, I'm kidding. Don't. Please keep this updated. It's fantastic. Genuinely, you've done an amazing job. And I'll certainly be using it for things that I do, and we'll certainly be using it in Motopod, and we will credit you each time we use it.
Yeah, because it's one of those things that it's great. You can quickly look at it, get the information you need, and you can sound a lot smarter than you actually are.
Which helps from my point of view.
Helps from everyone's point of view.
All good fun. All people can... drop us a little bit of listener feedback to say you're wrong because it's this.
Yeah, exactly. Now you can easily fact check us and don't have to trawl through pages and pages of the MotoGP.com site.
Like we used to do before that spreadsheet arrived.
Yes, exactly. The amount of PDF pages I've had open for this show.
I wonder what you're going to say. I'm only half listening then when you said PDF. I thought we were going down the Rolf Harris route. Anyway.
Let's not talk about a national hero. Okay? We don't need to bring that up. It's very sad.
For our overseas listeners, I apologise. It was an English Aussie joke about a TV presenter that's just been sent to prison for naughtiness with underage. Yes, inappropriate behaviour, I think, was the word. We apologise for being a little bit too local on that front. But speaking of news,
speaking of Australians in the news, Jack Miller has been making headlines the last week as his contract situation became cloudy and then became quite clear.
Courtesy of Mark VDS press release.
Jack Miller, when he signed for Red Bull IO, there was this persistent rumour that he then signed on for another 2 years with Mark VDS after that, which was at the time a pretty crazy contract because usually you don't have that step over from Moto 3 to Moto 2 all that sorted that quickly. That was a rumour and no one could confirm it. You know, Moto Matters had kind of hinted at it, but no one could confirm it 100%. Then about a month and a half ago or so, a new rumor popped up that Jack Miller was being offered a 4-year contract with Honda from Moto 3 to Moto GP, the first year on the production Honda, the next year on the satellite Honda, and then 2 years on a full factory Honda.
Yeah.
Which obviously puts your 1-year contract thing way down the shitter.
Yep, Dave, 1 year Neil.
There was this big rumour that, you know, Jack Miller had had this contract, and this came at the same time that Aki Ayo took over as Jack's personal manager. So there was this rumour, and then Mark VDS issued a press statement saying, nah.
Worded press statement. I've got it in front of me. Worded press statement.
Here, do you want to read out the press statement then? Because that'll clarify a few things.
Yeah, do you want me in full?
Yep, go for it.
Okie dokie. Dated the 4th of July from Belgium. I won't pronounce the town because I can't. While the Mark VDS racing team would prefer to keep confidential their negotiations and agreements with riders, circumstances dictate that the team clarify their position with regards to Jack Miller. Jack Miller recently stated on the official IO Motorsport website that he has no contract for the future. This statement is inaccurate. Jack Miller signed a binding 3-year contract with the Mark VDS racing team for the 2014, 2015 and 2016 seasons. Under the terms of this 6-page contract, the Mark VDS racing team negotiated on Jack Miller's behalf to secure him a Moto3 World Championship ride with the Red Bull KTM IO team in 2014. During the course of these negotiations, IO Motorsport team owner Aki IO was made aware of the contract between Jack Miller and the Mark VDS racing team, and also that, under the terms of this contract, Jack Miller would contest the Moto2 World Championship for the Mark VDS racing team in 2015 and 2016. The 3-year contract was in the form of an extensive pre-agreement, covering the relevant key points such as exclusivity, payment conditions and technical support. Nowhere was there a clause related to early release from the contract should Jack Miller receive an offer for MotoGP in 2015. Following the signing of this pre-agreement, a final contract was negotiated and agreed between the parties, with the key elements remaining unchanged. This final agreement was not signed, and all requests by the Mark VDS racing team for a meeting with Jack Miller, his parents, and his management team to clarify the situation with regard to Jack Miller's contractual obligations for 2015 and 2016 have gone unanswered. In the absence of a signed final agreement, the signed pre-agreement remains extant and binding on both parties. It is regrettable that we've had to make public this situation, but we really were left with no option, stated Michael Bartolome, team principal of the Mark VDS racing team. We have a contract with Jack Miller and we are already preparing for his arrival in the team for the 2015 season because, for us, a deal is a deal. If Jack has changed his mind and doesn't want to ride for us next year, then he or his management team need to come and talk to us, rather than simply ignoring our numerous requests for a meeting to clarify the situation. We are not interested in playing games. We just want the situation sorted out expeditiously. Until it is resolved, we cannot move forward with our own plans for the 2015 season, as we have no intention on reneging on the agreement by offering Jack Miller's place in the Mark VDS racing team to another rider. Finally, the Mark VDS racing team would like to wish Jack Miller the best of luck with his 2014 Moto3 World Championship campaign. I saw it was a nice round off on the end. I like that.
So, what, the compliment sandwich, you know?
Yeah,
good
absolutely.
Good thing, bad thing, end with a good thing.
Excellent. And I do believe from the fair hand of Ian Wheeler. That was
yes.
It.
Looks like Jack Miller will be racing in Moto2 next year.
You would suggest so from that?
Yes. That statement does kind of confirm that rumour that there was/is a MotoGP offer on the table, which is very interesting because the last rider to go from the lowest class to the biggest class was Gary McCoy back in 1990-something.
Yeah.
And yeah, you don't really see that too much.
Not at all. As part of the news later, we'll go into the other press release about Livio Loic. There's been some strongly worded press releases from Mark VDS this week.
Yes, there have been one or two. But it's kind of wonder what the situation is going to be like next year when Jack is racing for them. Seems like things are going to be a bit tense, perhaps.
It's not getting off on the firmest of footings, is it?
Yeah. And
there needs to be trust on both parts. They need both parties to be working the right way because Mark VDS are going to employ him to win the championship. They're not an also-ran team. They're not a second-place team. They want to go out there and win the title.
Mm, definitely, yeah.
In inverted commas, again, obviously, after looking at the situation for this season.
Mm.
So, yeah, it's going to be one where you need a huge element of trust between rider and team. And if that's not there, and again, it goes into that big word, that small but big word that Mike Moynihan came with earlier on, doubt.
Mm.
Once that sets in, and that's doubt from the team side as well as the rider. But there's certainly something that needs to happen on that front for a team as high in stature as Mark VDS are, to break cover and to put such a strongly worded email, a strongly worded press release out, then they're obviously pretty pissed off. And to be fair, rightly so, if they're not getting the return that they're asking. The only one side of the story come out so far.
Yeah, Jack Miller is staying stumm, as they say.
Which is unusual.
Yeah.
Normally he's got something to say.
I'd guess that Akiyo has probably told him to maybe focus on the racing, Jack.
Yes, I think he needs to because he seems to have lost a little bit of focus.
Yeah, that's the other thing. As you pointed out in an email between the hosts once this press release came out.
Yes.
He has struggled. He obviously struggled in Assen crashing out, and he hasn't been quite on the form that he opened the season with. And as we'll get to, the Honda Moto 3 bikes receiving lots and lots of upgrades, so the pressure's mounting from them, and this could be another thing that, you know, like with Lorenzo, it's a thing that plays in the back of your mind, and it could be that 0.1% difference in mental strength that means,
especially in Moto 3, where 0.1% covers the top three.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this situation keeps developing.
As we said, in when you alluded to the emails, you know, he's already shown that he has a chink. He's not developed, not a chink in his mental state, because he's only a kid still, in the nicest possible way. He hasn't developed that mental strength yet to the Renzo's level, but it does show that he is fallible after what happened at Argentina, and he gets pissed off really quickly.
Yeah,
and it shows. He doesn't laugh it off like a Marquez or a Valentino would do. So little things like this and putting this out really could knock him off his kilter a little bit more. And who's to say it's not already done that, because we don't know what's going on behind the blippers as you go into the paddock, because a lot of stuff doesn't, as you well know, doesn't get out of the paddock.
Yeah.
There's an awful lot goes on, political and everything else. So this might have been bubbling behind the scenes for a fair... Well, obviously it has, because the contract was signed a while back, the pre-contract. But this might have been playing on his mind, because obviously that Mark VDS had been in touch on a regular basis to form a meeting. And if this is playing on his mind, you know, it could be distracting him somewhat.
But it does also raise this other interesting thing of the contract was allegedly with Honda. There was also another rumor that it was with Yamaha, but I think that was just journalists covering every base so that they could say, "Yeah, I was right." If it does end up being the wrong one,
they wouldn't do that.
Never. But you know, Honda have the Australia Galicia team in both Moto3 and in the Sev Moto3, which is like this clear production line for them to get new riders.
Yes,
but
indeed.
Yamaha doesn't have that.
No.
Yeah, and one of Yamaha's riders is a lot older than the rest of the field, and is going to need to be, in theory, replaced a fair bit sooner. They have Paul Spargo lined up.
Yes.
Beyond that, who do they have in their stables?
They don't.
Yeah, they don't have the advantage of competing in Moto3 and locking down a rider at that early age.
They don't have a Rins or a Marquez Jr. or even a John McPhee to that point.
Mm.
Vasquez maybe is a little bit old now for that. I don't think he'll ever make the run up.
No.
But certainly if you look at the two Australia bikes, as you say, they're the ones that are going to be tied in and gone through in the same way that Marquez did with Repsol and come through that way. That was a feeder for Honda at that point.
Yeah, and even below that, they have Fabio in the Sev series, who's still only 15, but they're potentially changing MotoGP rules so that this Wunder kid can get in. But Yamaha don't have that.
No, so they have to pick from the rest, because especially in this day and age of corporates and sponsorship and everything else, they're going to get these guys. And it's proven, you know, with Mark VDS, they're looking at the potential of Jack Miller and gone, yeah, okay, 3 years. You know, there's another one-year contract out the window. You know, I'm going to go full circle or 180 degree twist. Anyway, we may see after in the last week or so, when with the news coming out of this, we may see more long-term contracts coming in and binding to show a path for riders. I may be the last of the one-year contracts.
Maybe, and it does also kind of come back to this point that we've kind of touched on before of Moto2 is kind of becoming this, like, I don't know how to quite describe it, but it's not quite the breeding ground that it was initially. It's kind of become this place where you have to go, you kind of have to go through it. But if you're getting a top ride in Moto 2, you're kind of already on that path. And yes, as you say, maybe you don't even have to now.
Once somebody does that, that will set the precedence.
Hmm.
And it will happen. Somebody at some point in time in the not too distant future will go. And as we said about the long contracts, 3-year contracts, something like that, as we said, you know, has been muted for Miller in another team, that people are already talking about it. And once that happens, that shortens almost everybody's career span, because they're forever looking for youth and exuberance. So when you get to the point where the youth are coming through in a couple of years' time or so, Bradley Smith is going to be what the age Carl Crutchlow is now almost, and the chance that he can be looking over his shoulder a lot harder than he is now, and it's going to be even more difficult to secure a ride because of the youth that's coming through with the backing that they have. And, you know, obviously they've got the talent as well. It's not just open to anybody, but you've got so much fast talent coming through.
Yeah, there does seem to kind of be this huge upswelling of there's Fanardi, Rins, Marquez, Miller, Rabat, Vinales, Salom, Folger. That's what, 8 riders or so?
But there will be some natural fall off that they won't gel with a MotoGP bike, because not everybody does. So I'm not saying all 8 of those guys are going to come up, but even if 4 of those come up.
Yeah, that's still a lot more than we've had in recent years, you know?
Yeah, even an average of 1 or 2 per year, if that.
Mm.
Well, yeah, it has been. It's 1 or 2 per year, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think, as we said, I think 2016 is going to see a big sea change, where it's new bikes, new tyres, so it'll be tight, and most of this young talent will have been in Moto 2 for 2 years, so they've had that time to adapt to a big bike and prove themselves or whatever, and I think we'll see a big sweep in of a lot more new talent than we've seen in previous years, because, as you've said, usually it's been, you know, 3 or 4 new riders, and the rest is pretty much the same as it's been for a couple of years.
Would that see the rebirth of World Superbikes?
Maybe. World Superbikes.
Just I'm only throwing that in, that's all. Just
World Superbikes is, yeah. We'll talk about the races, but
World Superbikes. That's what I mean. Something from that perspective. I know we spoke before we came on air. But something needs to happen on that front. We can chat about that obviously when we come to the races, but the riders have got to go somewhere, and it's a Dorna championship. It's a world level championship. Who's to say that your likes of Bradley Smith, Carl Crutchlow, people like that won't end up there? You know, Bautista, the guys that you're going to have the top 10 potentially closer than they've ever been. If you looking at everybody's got talent. I'm trying hard not to slate anybody's talent, because I'm not. It's just, they're all talented. It's just that some are more talented than others. And the gene pool at the minute, and the pipeline of talent coming through, is being lauded as being, they're all the next Marquez. Obviously, if you're Alex, you are the next Marquez. But the likes of Rins and people out there, they're focusing on those guys, not you Bradley Smiths of this world. Paul Espargaro's already there. But they're not anybody who's sort of 24 plus really is going to be, you know,
concerned about more than a year on a factory bike once you get to that age.
If you even get a chance, you know, there may not even be a chance of a factory bike, depending on, you know, who's coming through and when at what time. So the show's still going to be great. The spectacle's going to be great. But anybody coming in from anywhere else other than Moto3 and Moto2, there's going to be no more Nicky Haydens and Ben Spies coming in directly, and, you know, Troy Bayliss coming in the side door. The career path is already there. You can't see anybody come in directly into MotoGP from any other championship than the ones that are already with MotoGP now, either Moto2 or Moto3. Would you agree?
Yeah, you can definitely at a competitive level. Like, you can see maybe one or two World Superbike riders making the jump over, but Yamaha and Honda are really looking at Moto 3 and Moto 2 for their next top guys.
Yeah, for the top six.
Yeah,
you struggle to see Johnny Ray coming over and making the top, landing a factory bike to consistently run in the top six.
Yeah, maybe he gets the satellite bike at Grassini, but him landing Repsol Honda seems kind of difficult, because as you said, he's getting older. He's not old, but
not by any stretch.
But for racing, he's kind of past that point where
for top level MotoGP. He is.
Yeah.
I would suggest.
Which is, that's,
again, no, I don't want to sound like I'm being disrespectful to these guys, because I'm absolutely not. I'm looking at it from a subjective point of view with the young talent that's coming through with the support that they have. Why would they look to someone who's older and have been in the world championship for a few years and to come in that way when they've nurtured the talent through?
Mm.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I would love to see Johnny Ray in there. I'd love to see Eugene Laverty have a shot after ploughing his years into 250s. You know, he served his Grand Prix apprenticeship on, fairly poor standard bikes. And he's travelled, you know, he deserves his chance to have a go and show what he can do. But it's got to be on competitive machinery. And that will become less and less available. It depends what you want from your racing, doesn't it? You can stay in World Superbikes and run in the top three, top four on a regular basis, or go to MotoGP and round out the top 10. But it's still the pinnacle of racing. The top 10 in MotoGP, you would almost venture to suggest, is better than the top five. Where would the top five in World Superbikes finish in a MotoGP race?
Well, it depends on what bike they have.
Yeah, I know. I suppose it's a bit of a sort of an elongated question, really. It's a bit of a tenuous question, but really on the form that they're all on now and the pace that they're running and things, looking at just on a basic comparison, you'd struggle to see many of the World Superbike guys break into the top seven.
Yeah, maybe the odd podium challenge for the top guys, but
yeah. Obviously, all on the right machinery. You put them all on the right machinery. I don't think there's anybody at this point in World Superbikes, even Melandri, that would really concern, put the top five under too much pressure, even on equal machinery. That's where I'm trying to go with it.
As we've kind of talked about, like, everyone in World Superbikes is, air quotes, old. Like, apart from Loris Baz, there's not really that 19 or 20-year-old in World Superbike who's really making some rumbles.
Same principle in British Superbikes.
Yeah, you have guys like Michael Vandermark in World Supersport, who, he's going to be something special because he's quite young and he's doing well.
Who may well end up in Moto 2.
Yeah. But other than that,
Sam making that jump from Supersport to Moto 2, that's another angle that's going to start with people to look at, because he's made the transfer fairly successfully on a bike that isn't, quite on the mark as the guys ahead of him. But he's finishing, he's had a front row start, he's had a couple of top tens, he's not showing himself up against some of the seasoned campaigners, is he?
Yeah, definitely.
So it shows that there is a transfer between Supersport and Moto 2.
But then it's getting out of that Moto 2 class, because there is a lot of talent in that Moto 2 class, Any of the top 10, given the right day, could win one of those races.
No question.
And it's getting yourself noticed, and when money is so hard to come, money does play a huge factor in things like this. And just having, it's a lot of right time, right money, right bike and all that sort of stuff.
It's hugely hypothetical. I think it's great.
Definitely.
We might be talking shit, but really.
Almost certainly we're talking shit.
But it's great, because as we get talking, there's things I think of, haven't thought of previously, and you throw it in and you think, hang on a minute, that's not really a bad idea. But no, that's somebody will email in and say, Dave, you're talking out your ass as usual. But no, there's ways and means, and we've all got to speculate. That's what we're here for. If we didn't speculate and we didn't hypothesize, then we wouldn't have a show. So interesting. I mean, if it sparks debate among, if I could speak, it'd be great. If it sparks debate amongst the listeners or on social media, then great. We've done our job. We're just the vehicle for the thoughts.
Definitely. So yeah, if you have
deep tonight, isn't it?
If you have it is very deep. If you have any, if you want to share your thoughts on, you know, where you think the talent's going to come from, and what are guys like Jonathan Ray and Tom Sykes, who are at the front of superbikes, but you know, are they just going to stay there? Where do you think the talent's going to come from, and how do you think the next few years in GP will play out? So send us some emails at motopod@motopodcast.com.
We are good at this.
Just occasionally we get one or two things good. Speaking of good things that are potentially being ruined.
So smooth.
Today they had the test of turn 11 at Saxon Ring. That is the right-hander going into the waterfall.
Yes.
As we've kind of followed this story a bit.
We have, yeah.
Essentially, it's the first right-hander after something like four or five left-handers. So the right-hand side of the tyre is stone cold. So there are a few nasty crashes there in past years. Iannone, Dovi and Cal come to mind immediately. So
all in high motion, because they always plant the high motion camera there because they know somebody's going to lunch it.
Yeah. So we'd reported before that they were going to have top MotoGP riders test the new layout of Turn 11. And today we had Stefan Bradl, Bradley Smith and Andrea Iannone riding their MotoGP bikes around Turn 11. And what they'd done was they put up some metal curbing and they made the turn a bit tighter. From the photos, it looked about the apex was about 4 foot inwards. And this was in theory to slow it down.
Slow them down before they go. Yeah, that's fair.
But then Stefan Bradl, Bradley Smith and Andrea Iannone all said, well, that's very well and good, but if it's a tighter corner, it means we're carrying more lean angle, which can also cause crashes. And it
ruins camber and downhill.
Yeah, and it ruins a good corner. And yeah, it seems like it might make it a bit safer, but it's probably just going to ruin one of the best corners in racing now that Laguna Seca Turn 1 is gone.
Agreed.
So it seems a bit shit.
Yeah, no argument from me on that front. That's a great, because you know, as you rightly pointed out, that the right-hand side of the tyre is stone cold, so you know that they're right on the edge going around there, and they're making buttons out of the seat because they don't know what's happening.
Yeah, and
it's just great. You've been going left for what seems like 3 weeks, and all of a sudden you've got to go right. Fantastic.
And who knows what the Michelin tyres in 2016 could be like. In theory, it's only two more years, this year being one of those years, of having this potentially a dodgy Bridgestone right-hand side.
Yes.
That could cause crashes, and to ruin one of the best corners in GP racing for that is not good. And
it's not worth it.
And the crashes there were big, but none of them were super serious. Like Cal Crutchlow messed up his arm a fair bit.
Nobody tends to, because of the nature of the corner, nobody tends to high side. It tends to be losing the front.
Yeah, and then it's very fast.
It's a fast, and they do the old sky ground thing quite a bit halfway down the hill, and the bike tends to come back in a wheelbarrow. But it is a fairly injury-free corner. Although I do stand to be corrected on that front. But as you say, it usually tends to be superficial injuries rather than breaks and, anything that can stop them racing.
Yeah, it's a lot like how they tested the F1 layout at Catalunya, and all the riders said it was shit. Like, you have to leave some things not unsafe, but there has to be some element of
there has to be an edge to something. Yeah,
there does. There has to be that edge where it comes down to more than just being on the best bike, and it's about how far you can hang it over that edge and dance on that knife edge and push and push and push.
Mallory Park, prime example. Great little track, very, very fast, and they've thrown three chicanes into it. And now nobody likes it, because before it was a power track, and all right, there were only 42-second laps, whatever they were, but the riders enjoyed it. And then you had a couple of crashes, unfortunately. In fact, thinking about, there was a fatality, but I think it was more down to circumstance. But they've thrown a few chicanes in, and it's like, nah, it's not the same as it was. But you look at these and you think, you know, like you say, there needs to be an edge to it. There needs to be. And that F1 at Barcelona, I'm so pleased they all said no.
Yeah.
Seriously, really? I mean, I don't even like it for the F1 cars. I don't even like F1 cars.
I'll mention the F1 when we get to superbikes, because anyway.
I took the mickey out of a friend of mine today. He posted he was at Silverstone at the weekend for F1.
Oh, what, well, 4 hours for a fucking fence to be fixed?
Yeah, woohoo! 17 bolt socket, please.
I watched World Supersport and the time it took them to fix the fence.
On a straight bit of track.
Yeah, like it was a weird crash. So, like, just put some hay bales there or something. It'll probably be fine.
I'd rather see straw bales.
Here, go on, pimp your Twitter account. Come on.
No, it's fine. It's good. And my mate posted this Instagram picture, and he showed a car on the slowing down lap, and there's a guy sat in front of him, and he had ear defenders on. Why? Why has he got ear defenders on? It's so quiet these days. Yeah. I put a hole in my exhaust on my family car, and it'll sound louder than that. Anyway, he wants tickets to MotoGP so he can hear some real engine noise.
Good stuff. Speaking of real engines, do you want to cover this one?
Seamless.
Like the Honda gearbox.
Absolutely right. Bruce Anstey. He'll be racing the 500cc Grand Prix Yamaha at the Isle of Man in the Classic TT coming up. At Paget's Racing 1, they're showing pictures of the build as it goes on. They pictured the frame earlier in the week and the radiator and bits and pieces. So they're almost doing a piece-by-piece picture of them building this Grand Prix Yamaha. Paget's is like it's a little... what's the word I'm looking for? Like a treasure trove. There's all sorts of things in that Paget. It's up at Batley in Yorkshire. All sorts of Grand Prix machines that have never been raced. Honda's still in their crates. It's just an amazing place. There's all sorts of little Grand Prix nuggets hidden away in the back there of Clive Paget's shop. And they're putting Bruce Anstey on it to race. And if it was me, I wouldn't be able to sleep until I get the leg over it.
That sounds like it would be fucking scary.
Awesomeness. Just seriously, it's a long time since a 500cc GP bike's been round there. I think you're looking at the Honda Britain bikes. Roger Burnett, Roger Marshall, back in sort of the mid-80s was the last time that the 500cc bikes went round there.
Just two-stroke power band seems very, very scary.
You can hear that noise now, can't you? As it throws him out the front door.
No, but it will be interesting to see how that bike goes, because obviously it'll have modern tyres on it.
Yes, it will. Yeah. It's not going to be running on Dunlop slicks and what have you, but it'd just be nice to, if we can get any footage of it. I'm sure there'll be something on YouTube or what have you.
Bruce Anstey's been pretty lucky. He got to ride the Britain around. He's got to and stuff, and now he's getting to ride the 500cc Yamaha. Lucky man.
It's probably because they trust him.
Yeah, they know he's not going to do anything stupid with it.
Exactly right. You can take this disappointing news next.
Yeah, so... inside baseball. So Nicholas Ayo obviously broke his ankle high-siding at Assen, so he's missing Sachsenring. So Aki Ayo, his dad and team manager, has decided to put Gabriel Rodrigo on his Husky for Sachsenring. Gabriel Rodrigo races for Aleix Espargaró's team in the Sev Series. He's been on the podium a couple of times. I think he's had one wild card already this year at Barcelona, and he didn't do too well. But maybe he'll do better now.
Not only did the British Championship, though, was
it? No. That is a little nugget for someone to decipher.
Good luck to Gabriel for that, and hopefully Nicholas Ayo will be fit for the following round.
Yeah, he's already started rehabilitation on his broken ankle. He was on a row machine in one of those big boots.
Yes.
So that's pretty hardcore.
And I don't know if it was today or yesterday. Happy birthday, Nikki.
I have it on the stat sheet somewhere, yeah. Happy birthday, Nikki. I don't know what day it is.
Going back to the Jack Miller situation and Mark VDS, we said about emails, press releases, sorry, that I keep calling them emails because I get them via email, about the press release, the strongly worded ones. Mark VDS have come pretty public again about clarification about Livio Loy and what he was riding in the Moto3 class. they've confirmed that he was on a customer chassis, or chassis if you're in Oman and of Australian descent, with upgraded brakes and other bits from the KTM catalogue. Now, it was another strongly worded press release. I'll run through it, because you can make your own opinions from it. It carries on. It starts off about the Moto2 and the successes that Tiso Rabat is having, and Mika Kallio. And it goes on to say, well, while the team's efforts have been rewarded with success after success in Moto2 this season, the same isn't true of Moto3. 17-year-old Belgian Livio Loi is now in his second season with the team, but the results, other than his fourth place in Argentina, have fallen well short of both his and the team's expectations. It is true that our success in Moto2 hasn't been reflected in Moto3, but that's not through a lack of effort on the part of the team, explains Bartolomei. This year, Livio has been very vocal in his criticism of the Kelec KTM. So, for Assen, we made the decision to switch the bikes to KTM, just to see if it brought the improvement that Livio himself expected. We took a standard KTM RC250R to Assen on Wednesday and worked through the night to upgrade it. We fitted the KTM Moto3 World Championship motor, the latest WP suspension, and almost the entire KTM catalogue of factory parts. When the bike rolled out of the pit box for free practice on Thursday, it was as close to factory spec as we could get it. I doubt even KTM could have spotted the differences without reducing the bike to its component parts and measuring everything. It does go on to say about qualifying only in 30th. It was the worst performance of the season, and then went on to finish 25th in the race. It was disappointing for both Livio and the team. What's even more disappointing is how much criticism the team came in for after Assen. We've been criticised for going with the Kalex KTM in the first place, and we've been criticised for trying the KTM option in a bid to help Livio rediscover his confidence. It seems we are unable to do right for doing wrong in the eyes of some people. But the situation is very clear. We're in Moto3 to race, and Livio needs to start producing the goods and getting the results that he, the bike, and the team are capable of. If the results don't come after all this effort, then we need to take a long, hard look at the feasibility of continuing in Moto3 when there is no improvement and we're finishing out of the points every week. Unfortunately, that's the harsh reality of the situation when racing at this level costs more than €500,000 a season. Time is running out, so now we need to see some action. That's a pretty unprecedented press release and pretty scathing of their rider.
Yeah, but the press release they put out before that was equally, the press release about Livio Loi rather, was equally as strongly worded, and you know, it kind of said that he had Assen and Sachsen Ring to improve, or maybe there's a new rider or no rider after the summer break. And
yeah,
I think that This press release is just saying we're doing everything we can. It's really down to Livio.
Oh, yeah. I understand why it's released and why they're saying what they're saying, but it just... When was the last time you read a press release that was so clear in its intent and what it was... It was clear in its intent to kick its rider up the ass.
Mm.
To say, pull your finger out, son.
Yeah, but I don't see how this switch to KTM was ever going to suddenly... I don't know. Maybe they're looking for a different improvement than, say, IAMA's.
That would have been the chassis that he rode. That would have been a lot closer to the chassis that he rode in Rookies with the factory bits and pieces. That is about as close to a rookie bike as you would get. So that's what he had his success on. That's what earned him the ride in the first place.
But I don't see how jumping on a new bike, even with some previous experience on that chassis, is going to get a huge... Like, I don't see how he's going to go from 30th place to 15th place, having not tested on that bike in just two race weekends. Maybe Mark VDS aren't looking for that big of an improvement, and they're focusing more on times and things that aren't as easily accessible for the public to see. But...
They put everything together and there was no improvement whatsoever. In fact, he went 30th and then 25th, which if he managed to go forward three places from his previous results, that would have been a step in the right direction, surely.
But But the thing is that it's a completely new bike. Like, there's been no testing on it. You see all these riders who especially in Moto 3 and Moto 2, where the bike changes are a bit more common, is they'll get on a new bike and, you know, that they keep saying, we haven't done any testing. Like, we're not going to improve that drastically. We're testing at race weekends.
Which happens a lot. They use the Thursday or the Friday as a test more than anything.
Yeah, no, I guess other riders who switch bikes do to improve their results, or at least maintain the same results. Because in theory, I guess, yeah, it is in theory a better bike.
Exactly right. So, you know, say it was a Kalex chassis, and then I've gone KTM, because that's what he's ridden before, and that's what built his confidence and gave him, you know, the opportunity to take that ride. And I'm playing devil's advocate. I've got no inside information on this. I'm just looking at it from the point of view that, you know, anybody that follows Mark VDS on social medias, Livio Lloyd gets a huge amount of exposure, as do, and rightly so, Tito Rabat and Mika Kallio. But they've worked so hard with Livio, and really for the effort they've put into him, he really should be higher up the field. He should be worrying the top 10 on a regular basis. I don't expect him to be winning, because he's only a young lad and he's, you know, he's developing his style. He is fast. He proved that in rookies. But somebody somewhere is seriously pissed off that they've had to make it public their feelings on what Livio's doing.
Well, yeah, I think the other thing was, it's not like he was even consistently the top Kalex.
Which, again, if you're the, it's like, I don't know, obviously different for Sammy. He's only on the one speed. There's only the two speed ups, isn't there?
There's
two?
Three.
So if you come home as the fastest speed up, that's a victory in your mind, isn't it? So if you're coming home as the first Kalex KTM, yeah, you can't do any better than that.
Yeah, like being the fastest Ducati in GP.
You're the best of the rest, because that's what you can realistically hope to be. You're not going to be at the front. You're not going to be winning. So you've got to be the best of what you've got. And at the minute, that's far from happening. And for the amount of heralding that Mark VDS have done, and the faith and the effort they put into him, obviously there are other things. There's bound to be. You know, there's two sides to every story. I'm not avoiding that in any way, shape, or form. I only know one side of it, so I can only comment on that. So, you know, something's got to give. They've really promoted him. Everybody, you know, anybody who follows Ian Wheeler and the Mark VDS feed itself, with all these crazy haircuts and... Well, that's Livio Lloyd, not Ian Wheeler, obviously. You know, they want a return for what they've done. They've promoted him. They've never seen a rider with so much promotion finish so far down a field. So, understandably, they're frustrated. But there may be mitigating circumstances and things that we don't know about. So I'm not slating the kid's talent or anything else. I'm just looking at it from what I can read.
Yeah, I mean, like with most things in racing in the world in general, they're telling you what they want you to know, and there's obviously other factors on both sides that...
Yeah, agreed. Two sides to every story, but we can only comment on what we can read.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see how Livio goes at Sachsenring, if he does manage to get up his results, or if there is a change in the team after the summer break, like that first press release suggested.
Yes, interesting development. I think Mark VDS are going to have a busy summer break, I think.
Yes, I imagine that one or two lawyers will be earning a bit of extra money.
That I don't doubt. Where are we on this news? Where are we going now? Have we done...
Just the last bit of Moto 3 news.
Indeed.
We've seen Alex Marquez and also Alex Rins come on really strong with the Honda after a bit of a rocky start to the weekend, and that's because Honda are putting a lot of effort behind this Moto 3. As we said last week, it's about €400,000 to buy a Honda Moto 3 bike, and that's not including all the new parts that they've been getting. They got a new throttle body in Barcelona, a new clutch and gearbox in Assen, and that was after they got a new transmission in Qatar. So they've had three pre-series upgrades already this season, which in Moto 3 is pretty
exhaust as well.
They've had a million new exhausts. They have a new exhaust almost every session.
even if it doesn't quite fit within the length of the bike.
Yeah, so it has to get bent down, and then they change it. And
interesting that the KTM Killer has had so many changes before it actually becomes the heralded KTM Killer of pre-season.
Yeah, and it's certainly starting to look like that. I mean, Honda took a 1-2 at Assen, which was the first time since Mugello in the first year of Moto3 that that happened, when Maverick Vinales won from Romano Fenati.
Get you, Moto Podzone Steve Day.
having the MotoGP fact sheet helps.
Yeah, it does. But don't tell anybody that, because I won't give our secrets away. Speaking of Honda in Grand Prix racing, back up to the big class. Shock horror, and I hope everybody's sitting down for this, because it's huge news. I don't want anybody fainting or driving off the road, or, you know, concentrate. Danny Pedrosa has signed again for Honda for the new 2-year, is a new 1-year deal contract. 2 years for Danny Pedrosa at Honda. What a shock. And the amount of bilge and outrage and everything else that came out on the internet once it was announced was frankly laughable.
Yeah, everyone.
Seriously. The amount of people that are watching this with a blinkered view. You know, I don't often pass my opinion forward too much, because I'm not here for my opinion so much as to read the news and to help you guys, the listeners, offer your opinions forward. But really, I understand the point of it's maybe taking a seat for a younger rider, but would that younger rider consistently finish in the top four the same way Pedrosa will, and ride shotgun for a dominant world champion? No. Who's the best at finishing in the top four on a regular basis? Danny Pedrosa. He is the perfect man for that ride, in my opinion. Harry, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, exactly the same. There are a lot of people who are saying, you know, Cal Crutchlow or Jorge Lorenzo should get that ride, but why would Honda risk it? Sure, Cal Crutchlow and Jorge Lorenzo, both excellent riders, but
no question,
neither of them have ridden the MotoGP Honda bike.
Nope.
They're an unknown. Both of them have the potential to upset the apple cart with Marc Marquez.
Both of them are in a little bit of the wilderness mentally, and you know, this season is riding that they're both kind of lost.
And also, Danny Pedrosa has been riding the Honda and in MotoGP since 2006. He's
yes.
only finished outside of the top three in 2006 and 2011. He's, as you say, a hugely consistent rider. He also has incredible development knowledge. This
yeah.
is only Marc Marquez's second year on the bike. You know, you see riders like Colin Edwards get kept around because they have this insane development knowledge. You need that.
That's why Colin was at Yamaha for so long.
Yeah.
He was never going to win the championship.
But he helped with tyres, he helped with chassis, everything.
Exactly right.
And by keeping Danny Pedrosa around for 2 more years, he's able to finish second to Marc Marquez, wrap up the constructor's title, the team title, probably still finish in the top three in the world standings. There's 2 more years for Marc to take over the lead development role. Marc will by then have 4 years on the bike. Then they get in someone like Alex Rins or Jack Miller, who then they become the junior rider, and Marc Marquez leads development. And it's a smart move to keep Pedrosa. And anyone who goes on about,
I think so.
Yeah, he's never won a fucking title. Like, yeah, he's never won a title, but I think he has this.
He did Colin Edwards.
Yeah, exactly. And he has more wins than Jorge Lorenzo. Wait one sec. Let me open up the MotoGP fact sheet.
Yeah, go for it. The thing as well, I mean, Pedrosa's best chance of winning the title was, correct me if I'm wrong, 2012.
Yes, definitely.
He won 7 out of 8 of the last. So 7 out of 8, I think, of the last 7 out of the last 8 races, something daft like that. And you know, he had a chat apart from being in it at Phillip Island, which scuppered it, but he showed his mettle, and that did more for his contract and his confidence than anything else, because it proved he could fight. The first time I ever really saw him fight on a MotoGP bike was that season at Brno, when he took it to Lorenzo and he finally believed he could do something. Yes, he's been blighted by injury. Yes, he's the more diminutive of the riders. He's only little, and that is a disadvantage. But he fights so hard. He hasn't got the personality that Marquez has got, that Rossi's got. You know, but for actually turning up weekend in, weekend out, and actually doing what he's paid to do, Because think about it, he's never really been paid to win the championship, has he?
No.
Because he's always had more favoured teammates. He's always been the perfect foil. You know, you're bringing in Stoner and people like that. He's rarely been the lead rider.
Yeah, the only time he's really been the lead rider was when in 2008 and 2009 when it was him and Dovi, and the Honda was struggling regardless of what Pedrosa was doing. But even then, he was still able to finish in the top three in the world standings. Like, to finish in top three in MotoGP is no easy feat. That's not happened by accident.
No, exactly right. And people, but he's only finishing third and fourth. Jesus, I'd love to finish in the top 20 in MotoGP.
Yeah, Danny Pedrosa has 25 wins in MotoGP, all of that with Honda.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
25 wins isn't shabby, is it?
No, like, even if he only gets one or two wins a season, like, it doesn't matter. If Honda can get first and third in the World Championship, like, that's the second best result you can get.
Of course it is, but it also wraps up. But as you look at it for Honda as a whole, they need to wrap up that constructors' title as early as possible.
Mm.
And there's no better combination at the minute than Marquez and Pedrosa to do that.
Yeah, and more than that, it also keeps Repsol happy. Repsol are obviously Spanish,
indeed,
and they've been with Danny and also Marquez for as long as they can remember. Mm. So why would Repsol want to bring in someone like Cal Crutchlow, who's English? He's a bit rude, you know. Or Jorge Lorenzo, who has a bit of a temper and could upset Marquez. There's just, like, he's perfect.
Prone to mood swings.
Yeah. Like, yeah, if you were to bring in either Cal Crutchlow or Jorge Lorenzo, both are excellent riders, but both are unproven on the Honda. They're both going through rough patches, as you said, and they both have a bit of a temper.
It was Marquez that said that, wasn't it? When there was all this talk of Lorenzo to Honda and it was going to happen, it was Marquez that came out and said, yeah, maybe Lorenzo does want Honda, but do Honda want Lorenzo?
Yeah, and clearly they don't.
No. Why would they?
Yeah. Why go with someone who, he might be able to challenge Marquez, or he might do as well as Pedrosa, but we can pay Pedrosa less than him.
Yes, and you're not going to entrust it to someone, to entrust a factory RCV to Maverick Vinales, Jack Miller, any of the guys that are coming through. They need a year's apprenticeship on a lesser bike. Yes, Honda pushed to get the rules changed for to get the rookie rule abolished. We're seeing the reason why.
Yeah,
that Honda pushed to have that. It wasn't. Honda knew that Marquez was something special. They didn't just have it changed because they took a punt and think, well, you know, he might be all right. He might do something. I don't think even they expected him to win in his first season, but to win the title in his first season. But they knew he was going to be running top three or four. Could we realistically say that anybody moving up at this point in time would ride at the same level as Marc Marquez? That would be difficult to say.
Mm.
Personally, I think there'd be some that would make regular top fives and, you know, do a bradle, but I don't think there's anybody. Enough. No, it's not. But I don't think anybody at this point in time could walk straight into a factory Honda and bring the instant results that Marquez has. And that's what Honda want. And they can't see anybody doing that. Otherwise, they would have employed them. Simple as that. Honda don't do things by halves. They're considered, they do small steps, they don't change for change's sake. It's always a considered move. And their considered move is to put Pedrosa in. It's not by accident, it's not because there isn't anybody else out there. We know there is, but there's nobody out there that can improve on what Pedrosa can do.
Yeah, there's no one who fills Pedrosa's role. They already have a world championship.
There's nobody improves on it.
Yeah. Well, no one improves on it without a huge risk of potentially not improving.
Yeah. And, you know, Honda don't do risk.
No, definitely not. One thing you can say about Pedrosa is he is consistent. Still one of the most consistent riders.
And it seems that he's, apart from obviously his blip at Sachsenring last year, he's stopped being consistently injured.
Yeah, he's able to balance a bit better.
But it shows how fast he is when he's, and you think what he could have done with all the injuries he has had previously, because, you know, he never really did bounce too well. And every accident, every crash, because of whether it was his size or just his stroke of luck, he always ended up breaking something and hurting himself. But when he's fit, he is, no question, one of the top four riders in the world. And like you said earlier, that doesn't happen by accident.
Yeah, like all those seasons where he finished second or third, there was some point where he was, he either missed a race or was pretty seriously injured at some point.
Yeah, whether he broke his back at Silverstone or something, and
I think that was Hiroyama who broke his back at Silverstone.
Oh yeah, he did. Sorry, it was.
But you know, he's broken collarbones, all legs, all sorts of shit.
Yeah. So yeah, the amount of outrage. I love social media. I wouldn't be doing anything that I do today if it wasn't for social media. I'd still be just an armchair fan sat at home watching it on the telly. Some of the opinions that come out, Jesus, think before you press send. Because you just got to look at the bigger picture. I understand some people's point of view on it, and I can see both sides of the story. But realistically, there is only one answer, and the answer is that Pedrosa deserves that 2-year contract because there is nobody better around at the moment to improve on what he's got.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to finish either second or third in this world championship.
And second, third, or fourth in every race he contests.
Yeah, and the other rider who's going to finish either second or third is Valentino Rossi, and you can't sign him. So, of course, you want to sign the two out of the top three riders in the championship.
Yeah, it is, with the best one in the world, a no-brainer. So there. Dave says. But as a disclaimer, as always, I've been wrong before.
Yeah.
My wife will tell you that. On a regular basis. She's gone to bed, it's fine. She can't hear me say this.
Good stuff.
Moving on from the Pedrosa outrage, internet, and Honda malarkey to Hillgate.
Which is more internet former outrage.
British, it is. Not of the former British champion, Tommy Hill, but the Hills at Portimao. You take the lead on this one, mate.
So, Tom Sykes is perhaps not the most popular character in the world superbike paddock. As we spoke about a couple of episodes ago, in Sepang, he and Loris Baz had a bit of a coming together, and Tom Sykes fell off, and he openly criticised his teammate a fair bit. Then at Portimao, a Crash.net article, an interview with him, he was complaining about the hills, and then Chris Pike, who is Jonathan Ray's crew chief,
fellow Lincolnshireman like myself.
Yes, he posted on Twitter, and then Jonathan Ray responded, at least he's not moaning about his teammate. Then Eugene Laverty jumped in and said something about the safety meeting, and then Tom Sykes said, keep bitching, girls. And then Ray and Laverty went a couple more times, and then at some point Leon Haslam and Chaz Davies jumped in there, and then Loris Baz jumped in there as well, and then it kind of just became this big thing.
Great.
And throughout the whole weekend, everyone on social media, and even in the race commentary, they kept making jokes about it. And yeah.
Steve Day, I think he was sat at Stansted Airport reading it. The Eurosport commentator and friend of the show, and he pointed out, he said, well, at least that spiced things up for the coming weekend anyway. It's kept me entertained for half an hour. So at least the reading, I couldn't believe it all, because Chris posted the link to the article and just went, what was his word, really?
Yeah,
poorly put, one word and a link to the article, and there's this like 36 tweet thread.
And then obviously they're at Laguna Seca this weekend.
Yes.
Which is quite hilly. So
I do believe the corkscrew is intact. I did tweet Pata Honda earlier and asked if everything was all right, as far as if the corkscrew was still the corkscrew, because obviously we don't want anybody getting vertigo as they go over the top of it. But apparently Eugene Laverty was out with a bulldozer fattening as we were tweeting. So whether it'll be ready for the race or not, I don't know, because I don't want it too dangerous out there. But yeah, all over social media over the weekend, so many people were alluding to it and taking the mickey. At the end of the day, it was banter, but it just...
But all banter has some element of truth and some element of a bit of a knife sticking in.
There was an undercurrent. There was an undercurrent. But it may have been a slightly different undercurrent if it wasn't aimed at Tom.
Mm.
If that makes sense.
Mm.
He does seem to be as I read over the weekend, he does seem to be the ginger stepchild of the world's superbike grid at the minute.
Yeah, there are a lot of jokes.
Apologies to any ginger stepchildren out there. I'm not painting that with a broad brush, obviously. This was purely aimed at Tom Sykes.
There are a lot of jokes about blue dressing gowns coming out, which is obviously
Frankie Keeley returns.
Yes, which is obviously a callback to Frankie Keeley.
Assen against Foggy,
which was hilarious and can easily be found on YouTube, and I suggest someone goes and finds that, because that was in the real golden age of World Superbikes.
That doesn't happen anymore, does it?
No, nor does
it
Colin
really
Edwards
doesn't.
Swearing at the marshals and telling them that there's oil down.
Yeah, or David Tarnowski grabbing the chin bar saying calm the fuck down. It's just as Foggy's about to twat Keely, which was part of that same incident, I believe. There's no spice to it. Like, I don't know. It's just the phrase that the kids use these days. It's all a bit meh. If that's which is what the Muppets used to do. For me,
sure.
But you'll not remember that. So
no, I cannot remember Muppets.
I've been ages now. For those of you out there, remember, you'll know what I mean. It's the kind of you know what I mean. You know what I mean.
Sure.
Harry doesn't, but you guys do.
Sure. So, in more World Superbike news, obviously AMA races alongside World Superbikes at Laguna this weekend, but much like last year, there's going to be no TV coverage of the AMA races.
Crazy.
Which is, yeah.
Your national series and there's no coverage.
No, I'm not sure. I don't think there's even going to be a live stream. Most of the AMA and Superbike Shootout has been live streamed for free and like fully legitly throughout much of the year, but it doesn't seem like that's going to happen.
How does anybody get sponsorship in that series with no TV coverage?
Hits.
How do you sell that series to sponsors?
Yeah, because it's not like national. Even the Spanish national series doesn't attract like huge numbers. Like it attracts decent numbers, but.
But that's streamed on YouTube, isn't it?
Yeah.
So that's available to the planet.
But it's America, where motorcycle racing isn't super popular, and it's not on TV. How do you justify going, oh yeah, I'll chuck a couple of million at that to get no exposure?
Yeah, I mean, obviously you got Graves, they've got the Yamaha, they've got the Monster sponsorship and
Geico.
Things like. Yeah, but you think, well, how do you, do any of the other teams justify racing?
Well, I think that's why Michael Jordan
afford to race.
That's why Michael Jordan pulled out. He said, he or his team said, there's no TV coverage. Why are we wasting all this money?
Yeah, because it wasn't for TV coverage, there wouldn't be an awful amount, you know, there'd be an awful lot less sponsorship. And it go back to the days of the 70s, where it was just local sponsorship on local bikes, and racers got prize money. And lived off that. And obviously the brown envelopes that were handed around frugally at the time, start money and things like that, so they could make the money other ways. But the sponsorship thing, yeah, it's one for maybe Jim and Jules to look into this weekend, have a chat with some of the guys that are out there and come back to us on it and say, you know, how do you guys manage to achieve sponsorship? How do you sell a national TV series that isn't televised or broadcast on radio or on the internet or anything? Certainly it's an unusual situation for that. I really feel for the American fans on that front.
Yeah, because it's not like World Superbike draws huge crowds either.
Anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, like at Portimao, I think it looked like in the stands there are under 1,000 people at the whole track. Portimao was properly dead.
I thought they'd moved it to Qatar and it had rained. It's very similar. Barren, empty stands. But again, it doesn't matter where that goes. The popularity's not there. So you've got one series that's a world championship series that isn't popular. You've got a series in the States that is popular. There's a hardcore following of race fans, and no cover, and they can't get hold of it, and they want it. And it's fucked up, to be fair.
Yeah, like it shouldn't be easier to see British superbikes in America.
No, it shouldn't.
Than American superbikes in America.
I mean, we used to get it, I've said it before, we used to get both races live over here on Sky Sports, then on Motors TV. We used to love watching the Americans here, watching the AMAs. Damn good racing.
Yeah, and from what I've heard, it's still pretty good racing.
Yeah, unusual. Maybe somebody could write in on that front and let us know their thoughts on... please use expletives if necessary. It's not a problem. We're all grown men.
Yeah. Or if you are involved in the sponsorship side, just how do you justify
money
like that with such limited exposure?
Be interesting to know, because obviously with us being the other side of the pond and Harry being planted in the Middle East for the foreseeable future. It's just interesting to try and work it out when you've got something like BSB that's got it's really nailed its coverage and its social media coverage and its availability across the world. For something that should be equally as available, isn't. And it just doesn't make sense at all. So please, write in, let us know. motopodcast@motopod.com. motopodcast.com, sorry. It's getting late.
Yeah, just a couple more things and then we'll get on to the racing. Leon Camier is going to replace Claudio Corti on the MV Agusta.
Super sub?
Yes, for Laguna, because Claudio Corti managed to mess himself up kind of bad at Portimao during Super Pole. He had quite a nasty crash, and the bike went over him. He has no serious injuries, but I think it's one of those things of better to be safe than sorry.
Yeah, it's just come around too soon for him, hasn't it?
Yeah. Laguna's obviously the weekend right after Portimao, so it's all very, very quick. And kind of going on with this, obviously the Football World Cup final is on this Sunday.
It is.
And that is the same time that the World Superbike races will be running. So, excellent job organising that one.
Oh, well, but the US never made it to the final. England didn't make it to the final.
But I'm guessing most of World Superbike's TV viewers are English, and I'm guessing that most of them would rather watch the World Cup.
Do I have to have an opinion on that?
Sure.
I probably would rather watch the World Cup at the minute.
Yeah, and
me and many others, I think, at the minute.
That's the thing. It's hard enough to get people to watch World Superbikes as it is.
Without clashing with a major sporting event at the same time.
Yeah, so as we've...
On a similar time zone.
Yeah, as we've talked throughout the show, you know, World Superbikes is clearly struggling. It's decisions. I guess there's nothing you can really do about it. It comes to a point where...
Well, there's nothing you can pinpoint it to either, but really, in that respect, you can't say there's one singular thing wrong with it. I mean, obviously, the races could be more exciting than they have been at times, but it's been that... too often it's been that horrible processional thing. I don't mind if somebody cocks off into the distance and wins by 10 seconds, but there's a massive battle for second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth. But when first crosses a line and then a second and a half, 2 seconds later, second place, second and a half, 2 seconds, third place, it's, really? And there's been quite a bit of that recently. And, you know, as much as Steve Day and Jim Whittam, the Eurosport commentators, have done their best to make it sound interesting and exciting, it gets to the point where you think, actually, something isn't right. There is something fundamentally wrong with World Superbikes at the minute, because attendances are falling and TV audiences are falling as well. You look at people on social media, you know, I'm guilty of it. But I try and balance the family life as well. So if something's got to give, it's World Superbikes, because there's nothing really to draw me to it. The main draw last year was Sam Lowe's in World Supersport. I made sure I never missed that. But I'm at the point where if I don't get to see World Superbike, I know I should do for the show, but if I don't get to see it live, there's no point recording it, because I'm not going to get time to watch it any other time. So I have to watch it while it's on. And I get to the point where I think, do you know what? If I miss it, I miss it. And that's wrong. I don't know why I feel that way, and I know I'm not the only one. So I wonder if Hodgie can shed some light on that on Tuesday. He can be my shrink.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you didn't watch either of the races. I watched them mostly while waiting for the fence at the F1 to get fixed. but race one was like it has been, as you say, for a lot of the races this year. Tom Sykes won by 2.5 seconds from Silvan Gintoli, with Loris Baz third. That's become a pretty regular podium. Second and third have maybe swapped a fair bit. Melandri fourth, Jonathan Rea fifth, Alex Lowe sixth, Giuliano seventh, Eugene Laverty eighth, David Salom ninth, Sylvain Barrier, he actually did really well in tenth.
Yeah, and welcome
then,
back.
And then you had Chaz Davies crashing out. But all of those guys are in kind of the same position that they are throughout the year. You know, MotoGP, sure, it's Marc Marquez winning every race, but that fight for second is close. And yes. Then the fight for fourth and fifth is also close. Like there's the group of three of Marquez, Pedrosa, and Rossi, who are probably going to be on the podium. But then there's that whole second group of Bradle, Bautista, Crutchlow, Dovi, yep, Lorenzo, who all could mix it up.
Whereas Espargaró and Smith.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas in Superbikes, it's just kind of,
yeah. But also, if you had a you had a chance of a ticket. You either you got a ticket to watch Mark Marquez go around a track on his own, or you've got a ticket to watch Tom Sykes go around a track on his own. Who's the more entertaining?
Yeah, you go for Marquez because he's more dramatic on the bike. It's like with Stoner. I personally didn't mind Stoner winning by a mile because how he rode the bike spinning up the back and just all of it was impressive to watch every lap.
Absolutely agree. Absolutely agree. Majestic. And it was worth watching. But I do kind of recall watching race two. And again, I watch it and I think, well, I don't really take it in.
Race two was really strange. More exciting.
Yeah, it was. Exactly right. That's exactly where I was going with it. The fact that it was wet helped.
Yeah. Anytime there's a wet superbike race, it's usually like, okay, now we're going to get some good racing.
And it was.
Yeah. Jonathan Rea, he won by almost 7 seconds, but that doesn't really tell the whole story because you had a Gintoli and Melandri chasing him down, and they were within a second, I think.
Yes.
But then Gintoli and Melandri touched and both went down. So that was exciting.
Yeah, that's always, you know, uninjured. So that was all right.
Yeah, and then Giuliano, Davies, Lowe's and Haslam, they all had quite a good battle for most of the race. Giuliano finished second, and then Chas Davies finished third, which was his first wet weather podium in World Superbikes, I think, certainly with the Ducati.
Congratulations to Ducati to getting both the Panigales on the podium.
Yeah, strong job. And Alex Lowe's had an impressive race coming up to fourth on the Suzuki.
He needed that.
Yes. Eugene Laverty was down in ninth, which he's obviously still riding with a broken foot.
Yes, and that looked an absolute mess.
Yes, but he's still struggling a lot on
so,
that.
So he can be absolutely forgiven. The fact that he even managed to race with the foot in the condition it's in, let alone bring it home in the top 10. It was impressive. Chapeau to Eugene Laverty.
Tom Sykes, he had a bit of a disappointing race in eighth. I'm not really sure why he was so far down, but he was.
It could be just more to set up and confidence and ability, weather ability, possibly.
And he really doesn't have to risk anything. He's
no
clear title favourite.
Oh, he is.
We'll quickly go over the standings.
Big difference in the title standings for him. He like I say, he can afford a couple of off days. But yeah, good for Jonathan Rea to get that win for Pata Honda. He is a class rider in the field on a bike that is nowhere near as strong as that Kawasaki ZX-10R Ninja. Mm. That is the bike to be on, whether you're in British Superbikes, World Superbikes. It is the dominant production bike force. So it's nice to see a different set of names up on the top of the podium for that, Rea, Giuliano and Davies. I'd much prefer it if Davies had got second, because that means that Rea Davies would have been on the podium, which for anybody who follows popular music from the Kinks, I think that works really well. Anyway, that's a tumbleweeds flow past. So over your head because you're so young.
Yep, I just keep brushing past that one. So yeah, Tom Sykes, 284 points, 43 points ahead of Sylvain Gintoli, who is in turn 5 points ahead of Loris Baz, who is in turn 1 point ahead of Jonathan Rea. So that battle for second is still pretty close, but you'd have to say that Gintoli and Baz definitely have the edge over Jonathan Rea, just because...
In normal dry weather conditions, yes.
When the Honda works, it seems to work really well.
It doesn't have the consistency that the Kawasaki and the Aprilia have, though.
Yeah, but that good range for the Honda is maybe 10%, whereas the Aprilia and the Kawasaki seem to have like an 80% good range.
So yeah, that's right.
It's just such a big difference. Interesting to see two French riders battling for second.
Yeah.
France, obviously, not a super dominant force in motorcycle racing. But, yeah, the championship for World Superbikes looks pretty firmly in Tom Sykes' favour.
Especially if you factor in the 63 points that he's allegedly lost caused by his teammate. That would put him on a ridiculous score.
Yeah, he'd be well over 300. But, yeah, I can't see anyone bearing injury or a series of mechanical failures. I mean, there's obviously 50 points a weekend for races in Superbike, so it's a bit more up in the air than MotoGP. But I can't really see Sykes being beaten this year.
No. Unfortunately not. It would have been nice for somebody to make a fist of it and, you know, trip him up occasionally and, you know, chase him down to the flag. But there tends to be... With Misano being the exception with the Honda, there seems to be an air of inevitability about World Superbike races in the dry. But that could change. It just didn't seem to be the level of investment and development at that level. Because with them being... excuse me a second. There only needs to be there can only be a certain amount of development as homologation and all the other big words come into it. So, yeah, a little bit... Yeah, I don't know. I feel really strange. I'd love to get excited about World Superbikes again.
I really liked World Superbikes when Biaggi was in there, because not only was he good on the racetrack, but there was also drama off the track, which I know that's not the most important thing about racing, but having those other storylines like Biaggi coming up and slapping Marco Melandri in the face at Donington.
Subplots.
Yeah, like
perfect.
It adds that bit of excitement, and then that excitement gets taken to the racetrack. Like, you know, you see, oh, Melandri's gaining on Biaggi in the race, he's going to put in a hard move because he got slapped in the face.
Yeah, you know he's going to chop his nose off at some point.
Yeah.
And stick two fingers up at him. I didn't see World Supersport, mate, so if you would be so kind.
World Superbike was kind of like... World Supersport was kind of like World Superbike. Michael Vandermark won pretty handily at the end. There was rain towards the end, so that bunched things up quite quickly. Jack Kennedy, he finished in second, and with Keenan Sfoglu third. They had quite a good battle for most of the race, and it was only in the last few laps that Michael Vandermark was able to get away.
He then obviously good job by Jack Kennedy, that, and a shot in the arm for Simon Buckmaster's Honda team.
Yeah, definitely. Jack Kennedy had had a couple of crashes recently, so that'll be good for him. But the rain closed it up, so the 1.6 second gap is maybe not quite as indicative as of how dominant Michael Vandermark was. But the big thing in the World Supersport race was that Jules Cluzel retired. Jules Cluzel was Michael Vandermark's biggest competition for the World Supersport title, and this is, I think, it's his second DNF of the season.
Whereas Vandermark's been sort of the model of consistency.
Yeah, I think he's only finished outside the top four once or something, if that. So, much like World Superbikes, you now have Michael Vandermark, who's 53 points ahead of Jules Cluzel, and they obviously only have one race a weekend.
That's two race wins ahead. That's a commanding lead, isn't it? By anybody's standard.
Yep, that's okay. We can take it easy. We can, fourth, not too bad. We'll bring it home.
Again, it's another one where Cluzel really should be a lot closer and should be making it a little more open. Everything, three world championships have an air of inevitability to it, and we're only halfway through the season.
I'd say more than three. I'd say four.
Okay, I was just, you know.
can you say titter about losing Moto2?
No, but all I was thinking of at the point was MotoGP, World Superbikes, and World Supersport. So you want to throw Moto2 in because you like the lower classes, then that's fine by me.
Lower classes are the best classes.
We're here to help each other. I have no problem with that.
Okay.
You've got no argument from me on that front, mate. You know that. But yes, four championships that are a foregone conclusion, and we're only just into July. I know things can happen. I know you expect the unexpected in racing, but really with the consistency and the confidence that these guys are showing, it's all looking a little bit ominous for the competition in those four championships. However, things can change.
Yeah, the other big disappointment in World Supersport is Keenan Sfoglu. He keeps having technical troubles and just doesn't seem to be as on it as he has been in the past years. And he's someone who could really add that spice that we talked about to the championship.
Yes, because he really doesn't give a rat's ass.
No, he doesn't. He will headbutt you down the back straight at Aragon like it's nothing.
And just hold it and go, what did I do? It wasn't me.
Not me. I don't know. Some other guy on a Kawasaki.
I don't know. Or, no, if it was Keenan, so he'd go, I don't know. It wasn't me, but I don't... Like he's got his pants on that are too tight.
Don't be
mean. I love his voice. He's great.
Speaking of Keenan, since I'm in the Middle East, obviously I have a lot of free time. I was watching the 2010 Moto2 race at Estoril. That's the one where it was a bit wet and Keenan was having a wild card. and yes, he did a really impressive job of leading that race. And the other my other favourite thing about that race is they hadn't set his handlebars right, so down the main straight he was taking off his left hand to bash his handlebar into the right place. That is pretty hardcore.
There's also, I'm sure, another video, I don't know if I've mentioned this before on the show, I might have done, of him backing in a ZX6R on a private track, Supermoto style. He actually drops it onto his knee, and this it's ridiculous. I don't think it's photoshopped or anything like, or if it, you know, meddled with in any shape or form. But he actually comes into this corner and he backs it in and he almost drops it on his knee before he powers it round and out the other side again. Just him messing about on a ZX6R. I'll try and find it, and if I can, I'll send you the link and then we'll put it in the show notes. But the kid has got so much talent. I was out in Misano last year when World Superbikes was out at Istanbul, and myself and Ollie shared a flight as far as Amsterdam. So obviously we shared the same flight back, as it turned out, which was handy because he was my drive to the airport. So it was good that we all came back together. And he was saying that Sofwoglu out there is just almost demigod status.
Yeah, well, obviously, last year there was some political thing in Turkey, and I think even he was getting roped into the whole politics of whatever was happening out there.
Yeah, it's just amazing that for somebody, you know, he's never ridden really, at the top level. He's been world champion, multiple world champion, but only in the smaller class. Never done anything sort of world superbike level. He didn't really gel with the bike there, and you know, he's never ridden MotoGP. But you know, name another famous Turk.
Not many.
There you go, you see. Saladin, was he not Aladdin, but Saladin, was he Turkish?
I don't know. I think there was a dude called Ataturk. I think I once did a research project on Ataturk, but maybe he was fictional. I'm not sure.
One of the airports is named after him.
Maybe he was real then. I don't know. Maybe I've offended all of Turkey.
Istanbul Ataturk is one of the airports. I remember that from my days in the RAF.
Who knows? But yeah.
Interesting. Let's just digress anyway. We need Martin for that one. He's the man. He's the educated man. He's the historian. He would know that side of things. We could have a 15-minute eulogy about about the Saladin and the Turks and Ataturk and everything else. So once Martin gets settled out in Qatar, he can join us back on the show and regale us with stories of daring do in the desert and training pilots and what have you. It'd be good to have him back on the show.
Yep, I'm sure that once Martin comes back on, it'll be an extra long show purely for Martin's stories.
I think Martin should do one on his own.
Just a monologue.
We can just listen. Yeah. Then we can all just listen. It's great. We don't need to interject in any way, shape or form. Just record his own show. I think that'd be amazing.
Martin, if you're listening, feel free to upload your own show to the FTP and I'll sort something out.
Yeah, Motopod Qatar. Yeah, have we ever done a solo show? Oh, you've done one recently, haven't you?
There was one where it was just an interview show, so I did a
interview links.
Yeah, just that sort of stuff.
But I wonder how that would come across. They're like reading the news and things like that. It's like you're talking to yourself, which often I wonder. Sometimes, which is why I'm pleased we get emails, because a lot of sometimes if we are. But I enjoy it anyway.
Yeah, I'm more than happy to talk to myself.
I do. It's the only way I get any sense.
Yeah, exactly. I'm the only person to listen to me.
And it was true. I spent hours in your company on Skype, and it's true.
Okay, nah, this is getting mean. Let's go on to the fantasy league, where more jabs will come out. So obviously we're on the eve of Saxon Ring, so it's time for a bit of a Motopod fantasy league update. We haven't done one of these in a while, so there's actually been a fair few shakeups in the overall league. Yeah, I didn't really recognise any of the top names. Currently, the leader is...
Go on, I'm looking forward to this.
Matthew Richtenek.
That'll do. Nicely, well done.
Probably not how you say it. He has 718 points, which is a fuckload.
I demand a recount. That's exactly 100 more than I've got.
So yeah, he's leading the overall league quite handily, and I haven't checked any other leagues, so I'm not sure if that's like really good or if that's what all the leaders are kind of at.
No, I haven't either. I tend to do a little flurry of changes, and I kind of get the team I want and then leave it at that, and then put it down to luck on where they finish.
So yeah, so good job to you, Matthew.
Yeah, congratulations so far.
Jules is still leading our little host sub-league. He's in 12th with 673 points.
Yeah, that's a good score.
That's a very good score. I'm down in 32nd and second in the hosts league with 631 points.
That's catchable.
I was absolutely devastated that I didn't have Ant West in my Moto 2 team after having him in there for like 3 weeks. And then he goes and wins for the first time in 11 years.
So you can't get commentator's curse then, can you?
He better do well at Saxton Ring because he's back in my Moto 2 team.
I had an amazing bout of commentator's curse at Knockhill.
Oh, yeah.
It's so good to see Josh Waters making it back into the top 10. Oops. As he drops it at the hairpin just after the tweet registers.
Yeah, literally 30 seconds. It's ridiculous.
Never again. Until the next time, anyway. Sorry, carry on. Me next.
Yes, so you are in third overall, 45th in the league with 618 points. Again, quite catchable. You have six riders, so...
Yeah.
You know, it's doable. It's doable. Then Martin Darlington is in fourth in the league and 54th overall.
After leading and bragging his ass off early doors of the season.
Yes. Unfortunately, he has fallen behind. I'm not sure how much he's been keeping up with the league being in Qatar, but he has 608 points. So again, still not out of the runnings. He's doing okay. Someone who's actually caught up a fair bit is Jim. He's fifth in the list in the league and 69th overall.
That'll make him smile.
Yeah, I'm sure it will. But has 592 points, so he's improved a lot, because at one point I think he was over 100 points behind, so he's still firmly in the battle for second place. But I think Jules may have this one in the bag, unfortunately.
Well, that wraps up the show for this week, I think, Harry. We've covered just about everything, and the listeners hopefully will still be awake, or if they're travelling across country, it's killed an hour and a bit for them. As always, thank you so much for listening. Wherever you're going, whatever you're doing this weekend, enjoy the racing, enjoy whatever you've got planned. And we'll be back next week with Neil Hodgson on the show, and quite possibly myself and Harry again, unless the native Northern Californians want to join us as a refreshing change. It'd be nice to have the boss back on. That is a fact, and it'd also be nice to hear from Jules as well. So I'm sure there'll be a raft of interviews coming from Laguna Seca.
Regardless, there will be a lot of interviews. Jim has been busily posting on Facebook about sorting them, so.
Yes, so hopefully there'll be something forthcoming from those. Not quite in a Phil Hall style-y of...
not quite the two shows worth of interviews.
Nobody does it like Phil Hall does. No wonder he has the rest of the year off. From the Island Classic and World Superbikes. That's it. Boom, I'm done.
I think he's doing MotoGP for us this year.
Excellent.
That will be
really good. Yeah, that'll be great. I like Phil. I like listening to Phil and what he does. He's really good. So yeah, hopefully we'll have another long show for you next week. We've had a couple of short ones. Look forward to seeing what we come back with. Potentially it'll be me and Harry, but it could be me, Harry and Jim, or any combination of the hosts. We might even hear from Martin as well. So enough of my jibber jabber. Harry, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time, mate.
Yeah, likewise. It is always a pleasure, and I hope the listeners enjoyed it.
And I hope so too.
Yeah, feel free to give us any comments, criticisms, concerns, feedback, and all that jazz. There's maybe some cool things coming up for Motopod if you check my Twitter, which is at HLPhotoGP.
Indeed.
And your Twitter is at Dave Neal or at Strawbales Media. Is there an underscore in any of that shit? Probably not.
Nope.
Okay.
Not at all. Excellent. I can't with punctuation and things.
And obviously the official Motopod Twitter is at Moto_pod. So follow all of them for the latest updates and my general bullshit.
Yours and mine both, yeah.
So if you want to see me tweet about lizards, feel free to give us a follow. And if you want updates about the show, then follow the MotoPod account and maybe give Dave and I a follow.
Is that a lizard in your pants, or are you just pleased to see me?
Just pleased to see you.
And on that note,
good night, everyone.
Good night, all.